Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we visit with our physical therapist, Bill Boisenald, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic of UW Hospitals and Clinics. Bill, great to see you again.
Larry, thank you. Great to be back.
And Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine Spine Center. She's also the grad program director for Rocky Mountain University Health Professionals, in Provo, Utah.
Hello.
Hi.
What a lovely day.
Yeah, it's a
great day. I saw all kinds of people out running, even in shorts.
I've seen shorts pretty much all winter walking around.
I know. Yeah,
it's amazing, isn't it?
I know. Yeah.
Probably means there's a few injuries out there.
Probably. Maybe a little frostbite on occasion. But
winter's not quite over yet, but
yeah.
I tell you.
Well, there was a recent USA Today article, and there's a link to it on our Facebook page. It has a lot of people talking. It focuses especially on active baby boomers and knowing when to get immediate medical attention for an injury and when it's okay, or maybe even better to give it some time. And that's always, that question comes up a lot on the show when you guys are on.
That's a really tough call to make. I mean, even for us who are experienced, because you know, you're taking what you know about pathology and anatomy and the natural history of disease, and you're kind of speculating, given the mechanism of injury, what the most likely problem is, and you know, then what the differentials are, and then you do this weighing thing of, well, what are the downsides of waiting, and what are the risks of waiting, and what are the potential benefits of waiting, you know, in terms of reducing costs and unnecessary tests and interventions.
Yeah, Larry, you're right. It is a theme probably throughout our shows, and
yeah,
it's knowing when to get treatment, and in part of the article, the themes were how to avoid treatment, how to avoid getting yourself into trouble, and it's recognizing what kind of pain is okay to work through and what kind of pain is not.
Yeah.
And it is not so clear-cut, as Lori just mentioned.
Well, let's take lower body injuries. If you can bear weight on it, even if it hurts, is that a good sign?
No.
Not necessarily.
No. If it's really painful, and particularly if it alters your gait, you're just asking for trouble. Because as, for example, there was a woman that they highlighted in this article who hurt her knee, and then she ended up going to the physician for hip pain, probably because she changed how she walked. So, you know, just because you can put weight on it doesn't mean that there isn't necessarily something wrong with it if putting weight on it requires you to significantly alter how you walk.
Yeah. You know, and it's the type of pain that also makes a difference. If it's really sharp and shooting, you know, that's going to alter how you walk and how you stand. And that can be indicative of a more serious injury. But, you know, stiffness, some soreness, a little achiness, and you can put weight on that leg, then, you know, you don't need care at that point in time.
Yeah.
And one of the points they make in the article is that, as a general rule, within a few days, most people start feeling better. If after a few days you're feeling worse, not better, then that may signify there's something more serious going on that needs to be looked at.
Yeah. Is that same for the upper body, by the way?
Generally, yes. You know, if you're walking and, you know, you have some of that stiffness or achiness that Bill described, and then as you get moving, it decreases, well, you know, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
But if it worsens as you continue to put weight on it, and the same thing with your upper body, if, you know, your shoulder feels a little stiff and sore when you start an activity, and then it feels better as you get going, and then maybe get stiff and sore again later, you know, that's not an urgent problem. But if you are using it and it continues to worsen and continues to worsen as you use it, then that's a sign that it probably needs to be looked at.
Yeah, and the focus of the article was pain, which makes sense. But if you combine pain with swelling, you know, that increases the potential seriousness of it. Pain with numbness or tingling or weakness also,
yeah,
where you're thinking the nervous system could be involved here, also kind of increases the ante of having this looked at.
Yeah.
But a majority of the aches and pains that we all have, people don't need to be seen. But those are some of the warning signs just to be aware of.
Lots of good things. And my father-in-law is going in for knee replacement this week.
Very common. very common. I think the article said 1 in 20 people.
Right. Over the age of 50.
Over the age of 50, yeah.
He's over 50, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, it's very common, and people, you know, spend a lot of time deciding whether or not to go in and get that joint replaced. And typically the surgeons who do these surgeries tell you when the bad days are winning and you're starting to really limit your activities, limit your socialization, you're homebound more often because your knee bothers you. Well, that's the time to think about getting something done.
And he's a big golfer, and so it's...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's painful in many ways, even aside from the knee, not to be able to get out there and play golf.
Right. Right, exactly. And, you know, your recovery will be better if your knee is in better shape prior to your surgery. If you've lost motion, if you have constant swelling in there, it's going to be a lot harder to recover from that surgery. So anything you can do prior to your surgery to keep your muscle strong, to keep your joint loose and mobile, will speed the recovery afterwards.
Yeah. And typically, I assume there's a whole sequence. I think he was talking about the physical therapy that goes on for anybody who has that kind of...
Yeah, there's pretty standard regimen. You know, they're in the hospital getting therapy a couple times a day until they can meet certain parameters, such as ambulating a certain distance. They can go up and down stairs. The therapist will find out what their home setup is to make sure that they can access everything they need to in their home. Then they're usually discharged. They may go home, or they may go into an intermediate care facility if they need further very intense rehab, especially to regain their motion. They want to get that range of motion back right away.
In the beginning, the goals are kind of survival skills. Can you get in and out of bed, up and down from a chair, and walk and use stairs? Once all those goals have been met, then the therapy starts shifting toward activities that they want to do. So you find out golfing. There's a different set of, you know, program for somebody who wants to get back to golfing than someone who walking is really all they're going to be doing.
Yeah. Well, good luck to Herb.
Yes, good luck, Herb.
And there may be some other things that come up relating to the knees as we move along here today. Mike in Genesee, though, has a question for us that relates to, I think, the arms. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. I'm 51 years old and play basketball a couple days a week and then lift weights usually a couple days a week, not heavy or anything, just to try to keep some muscle tone. And a few months back, I don't have any particular injury that made me notice this, but I think I started feeling it after playing basketball. If you hold your hand out to shake somebody's hand, right at the bottom of my bicep, going through a couple inches of my elbow, I've got a pain there that, like if I hold a coffee pot out, I get a pretty intense pain or don't even feel like I can hold it very well. And occasionally, if I'm carrying something light, like my iPad in that arm as I'm walking, and then later release it, like let it go and then straighten my arm out, that's when I get the pain. Not holding it, but when I straighten my arm back out. I don't know whether I pulled a tendon in there or did something to a ligament, but...
So it seems right in your biceps tendon down at your elbow. If you flex your biceps and put your finger on that tendon, it seems to be right in there?
Yeah, very much. Like right under that main tendon that goes up the top.
It's right.
Like just underneath it.
And do you have any pain when you play basketball or do weights?
If I throw a ball, like try to make a long court pass, mm-hmm. one arm like a baseball, then mm-hmm. occasionally I'll get a pain. And... Mm-hmm. Curling, I definitely feel it when I do curls,
okay.
even at lighter weights.
Okay, yep.
Especially as I get near the top of the curl.
Okay.
Yeah, you can see that.
Yep, yeah. So, you know, potentially a biceps tendinopathy, you know, insertional kind of tendinopathy at your biceps is certainly a possibility. And, you know, all those problems that you describe are fairly consistent. When you have to throw a ball hard, your biceps decelerates your elbow as it straightens.
Mm-hmm.
So your biceps is involved in all those activities that you described.
Okay.
Since it's been going on for quite some time, I'd go in and have it looked at and verify the biceps as the source of the problem. And since you have access to a gym, they can probably set you up on a rehab program focused on your biceps to help you get over this. Because if it were going to take care of itself on its own, it would have by now.
Okay.
So I think just fine-tuning your activities, a little bit of modification can help you get over this.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Facebook question from Nicholas. Avid outdoorsman, deer tick issues last year and has been treated since then. Anything special? Since apparently he's been treated for Lyme disease, and that's obviously an inflammation of the joints, Bill.
Right, an infection, correct, right. The the best treatment for this is prevention, and people who spend much time outdoors and in the woods and hiking and camping doing tick checks on a regular basis is really important. Once you are infected, then the earlier the diagnosis, the better, because it's a systemic illness. It doesn't impact muscles and joints. It can cause a kind of an aching sensation, a toothache, a flu-like ache that can be very debilitating. But it can impact any body system, and so early recognition is important. The key is getting on the appropriate medications for it to help get rid of the disease and minimize the impact. From a rehabilitation perspective, if there are people who develop weakness over time, that can be addressed in a rehabilitation program. But it needs to be – people need to be followed fairly closely, because they can overdo the activity and then they don't gain strength. And so it's the dosing of the activity that's really important at that stage.
And in terms of prevention, I'm sure Nicholas knows about these things, but the tucking your pants in your boots, wearing a hat, all those things to keep yourself covered to the best of your ability, wearing light-colored clothing where you can spot a tick rather than dark-colored clothing. I mean, all those things are really important factors in reducing it. And there are some repellents for ticks, and I know that people don't necessarily like to put them on their skin, but you can spray your clothing with those. So there are a number of things you can do on the prevention side.
Yeah, there's actually a material that you can spray on your clothing that actually kills ticks. But apparently you put it on your clothes, you don't put it on yourself.
Right, right.
Ed in Wausau, it is your turn. Hi, Ed.
Hi. In 93, 94, had a lumbar surgery between L3 and L4, and so as a result, I have to wear one of those armpit to groin wraparound plastic braces, and I had a pound limit of 40 pounds on myself. And because I'm 69 and pushing 70, I talked to my physician at UW Health to build myself up, and did pretty well up until the last snowfall, last May 22nd or whatever it was. But when I was out shoveling, it took me quite a bit of time, and when I went up my first flight of stairs, my left foot caught on the top step, and I managed to careen myself into a window overlooking my side entryway, and then bashing my head against the side of the window, which...
Ouch.
Kinda, oh, jeez.
I had cataract surgery in both eyes, and I didn't find out until it was around the 4th of July. I went for an eye appointment, and the cataract in my right eye had actually shifted over completely, and I ended up with vertigo. But my question is that I ended up hurting my cervical vertebrae and my left arm in breaking my fall. And I was doing fairly good this last winter, until I went to throw some snow forward, and again I got to act up with my right arm. There must be a cord or something that interacts with my spine, and when I go to you know, throw snow, if I throw it incorrectly, it just is a sharp pain that goes from the tip of my spine all the way over to my, you know, right clavicle. And I've been lucky so far. Our snowfalls have been fairly light.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Ed, can I ask, how many weeks ago did the fall happen?
That the actual fall happened, last May 22nd or something like that.
Okay, gotcha. So
and I was building myself up and working with a physical therapist and whatever to regain, my ability, but it just seemed like I just, had one more shovel flow this, a week ago or whatever, and it hurt again.
So. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. So, Ed, in the last couple of days, are you getting better or are you getting worse?
I just threw that shovel full, let's say, a week ago or whatever.
Right.
And so right now when I just move my left shoulder, I can feel that pain is still there right above the clavicle. If I put my hand right back on it, it's halfway between the tip of my spine and my left clavicle.
Okay. And how about if you lift anything around the house? Does that bother that spot?
I'm trying to be really careful when I'm, lifting things.
Okay. All right. Well, with the history of the fall and with this last episode with shoveling and the fact that you can still pretty easily bring the paint on and it's sharp, I'd go in and be evaluated, and they should be looking at your neck, your collarbone area, and then your shoulder itself. There are muscles that connect the neck to the shoulder, and there are nerves that run through this area. So, with the past history and this recent onset, I would go in and have them examine you and see if they can figure out what tissue or what area really is causing this, and see if they can sort it out between the neck and the shoulder. I think that would be helpful. Then that would help guide what you should or shouldn't do at home, mm-hmm. besides just avoiding the sharp pain.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, who both spend a lot of time working in the physical therapy area. Bill is a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center at UW Hospitals and Clinic. Lori is physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. So, and they're regular guests. They've been doing this for a long time. It's great to have them here, and thank you so much for listening in. I know that Saul has been waiting quite a while from Stevens Point, so let's just go right there. Hi, Saul. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Good to talk to you and your guests. I've been fighting a groin pull for months now, and it's gotten somewhat better. I ice it every night. But, it's to get away from the sharp pains. When I was walking, I started to change my gait, and I can feel muscle twitches all over the place. I'm just wondering what the best treatment for a groin pull is. I know how I did it, and I don't do that anymore.
are you willing to share with us how you did that?
Yeah, I was on a leg press. It's a 45-degree leg press.
Okay.
And, it wasn't a lot of weight. It's just I'm kind of really tight, and I think I just overextended when I was lowering the weight.
Well, I'm gonna let Bill jump in on this one as well, but that's not a common mechanism for a groin pull because of the angle of your feet, particularly with a light weight.
I used a different angle on my feet.
Okay.
I was trying out another theory.
Well,
so you're inventing exercise.
Okay.
When you're hiking down a trail with really heavy pack,
right.
You splay your feet.
Right.
It's called a farmer's walk. And I thought, well, I'm going to try that, you know.
Okay.
But it also exposes other parts of the muscle instead of the straight
okay.
quads.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, because what we're trying to figure out is whether it's truly a groin pull, because after several months, a groin pull, you know, a muscle strain of some sort really should get better unless you're just wailing on it every day in your daily activities. You know, typically, you know, you get some load to your groin muscles during normal gait, but it's not a big load. So we're kind of scratching our heads and trying to figure out why it's not better. Do you have any theories about why it's not better?
My theories aren't worth much.
I guess that's sort of evidence.
Yeah, you're living proof there.
Yeah. So, like, well, has anyone?
It's very sharp. And
okay.
To the point where I start to limp if
okay.
if it hits me. So that's gotten much better, but it's still
okay.
there.
Is it high? Is it a high groin pull?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Right
at
yeah.
the attachment to the bone?
Oh, no. No,
no?
Not
okay.
that high.
Not that high. Okay. And has anyone looked at this?
No.
Okay. That might be where I'd go next.
Okay.
Go ahead and jump
yeah,
in, Bill.
He's
nodding his head.
I would agree. The fact that it's getting better, obviously, is good news, and it should continue. But like Lori said, if this was just a muscle pull, you should have been better already. And there may be a specific stretch or way to stretch or other muscles to strengthen around that hip to take some pressure off that spot. And then the therapist also can go through with you daily activities that you do at work or for leisure and maybe modify some of those to help protect that area a little bit as well.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm.
we're getting into hiking season, and I'm guessing that's something that you're going to want to do. And it's
I was up at Devil's Lake yesterday, actually climbed a little bit, and it didn't bother me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, then I'd still say get into somebody because, A, somebody needs to verify that this is indeed what you're working with,
you
and
have.
Then to
yeah.
give you some directed stuff to help get you off the plateau.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, all. Appreciate it. We have an email from Max from Oak Creek, just wondering what you guys think about those belts you wear to stimulate your abs using electric pulses. Do you know anything about those?
I have no personal experience. I've talked to a few people who use them.
No research of any?
I'm not aware of any research
okay.
at all that says. I think if the idea of trying to wake the abs up to produce a sensation so you think about your abs, I think there's probably some merit to that. But if you're going to strengthen a muscle, the muscle needs to be worked. And the best way to do that is with movement or isometrically. You get a much bigger bang for the buck
okay.
I think with the right type of exercise to target the abdominals.
And we have a Facebook question from Tracy. Can you talk about tendonitis in the foot? How long for recovery? You got foot tendonitis. Do the custom orthotics help at all?
Oh, good,
any exercise?
Good questions.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It depends upon what you're talking about tendonitis of, the most common being the Achilles, but you can get tendonitis and other tendons in the foot as well. So the first question for any of these kinds of problems is what caused it in the first place? So you can do all kinds of interventions, but if you don't remediate the cause, then you just keep sort of banging your head against the wall. You never make any progress. So the recovery depends upon where the tendonitis is and how much you're on your feet. So, for example, if you have an Achilles tendonitis and your job is, say, delivering mail on foot, it takes a really long time to recover because you can't rest. If you are a computer IT person, you sit at a desk all day, you'll probably recover a little bit faster because you control the loads on that tendon. So, you know, you can't say how long. There's so many variables. Do custom orthotics help? They will help if you have a foot biomechanical abnormality that would be improved with an orthotic. If you have a relatively normal foot mechanically and you've just overdone something, then a custom orthotic isn't going to make a difference. But if part of the reason you developed the tendonitis was that you had excessively flat feet or excessively high arch or something, then an orthotic
sure.
may help you. But again, it's not true for everyone.
Todd and Stevens Point, I'll turn to you now. Hi, Todd.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Based on these calls from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, I'm wondering why we're all breaking down up
here. Yeah, be careful.
My question is, I'm in my early 50s. I run a marathon about every year, every other year. My most recent was last May. I had surgery for torn medial meniscus about 3 years ago, and it kind of came back, and after my last marathon, it hurt every day. So in December, early December, I had surgery again on the same knee. They had to repair the original tear and found a new one. I'm on my feet all day, but I have in the last, several weeks, started doing things like running in a pool, working training for marathon at my age. I'm, trying to be pretty ginger. I'm not trying to push the envelope, but it still hurts all day, every day. And I have an appointment coming up with my surgeon, and I'm just wondering if that is typical, and don't you dare bring my age into this conversation.
I wouldn't dare bring your age into this conversation. I guess is the question, should you be training for a marathon?
No, I just want to get pain-free, daily activity.
Well, and so you're running in a pool, and you're still having pain.
Yep, if I twist, do any torque, like I was going somewhere and I changed my mind and quickly turned direction.
Yeah.
And it was like a knife stab.
Okay, and you just had the one surgery 3 years ago?
Yes.
Okay, and you said it came back.
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
I had to have surgery again, and they had to repair that tear.
Oh, that's right. Okay, and what was the status of your joint surfaces? Did they tell you?
They said there's minimal indication of any arthritis. They said ACL is fine.
Okay, all right. Well, you may just have to take a little bit more time in the pool, especially if your work requires you to be on your feet all day. And, then you talk about, shock absorptive insoles and whatever you can do to minimize the loads on your knee during your daily activities, continuing stuff in the pool. And, it's going to take some time for your joint surfaces to accommodate. I don't know if things like the Synvisc injections are available to you or not, but the Synvisc injections can be useful. Series of 3 to 5 injections are sometimes helpful, so you could ask the surgeon about that.
What is Synvisc?
It's basically a synthetic. It's like WD-40 for your knee.
Oh, okay.
It's hyaluronate, which is one of the molecules that are a component of articular cartilage, and it seems to improve people's symptoms in their knee. And it exceeds the half-life of the medication. So it's doing something, and they're not exactly sure what. But those are very helpful for people kind of in his pain category.
So generally speaking, surgery like this, 2 to 3 months, maybe more, to become pain-free is not at all unusual.
Not at all unusual, especially when it's your second one.
I see. Yeah.
Todd, have you seen a physical therapist since this last surgery?
I did the first surgery I did. This one I did not.
Okay.
I think it was partially because I kind of outlined to my surgeon the types of things I was doing.
Right.
Icing it, like at the end of the day, if it's real sore, I'll ice it. I try to not take as much ibuprofen and stuff. So I think they kind of detected that, mostly I'm doing what I'm supposed to, and I'm trying not to push the envelope. I've tried cortisone. It doesn't help at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you've done the right things. The fact that you're still having this problem, when you go back and see the surgeon, maybe talk about another visit to a physical therapist. I mean, they can tell you pretty quickly whether they have anything different to add for you, but there may be some specific muscle atrophy that's occurred, or have them look closely at your foot and ankle mechanics. Any little thing that they can change to help take some pressure off that knee may help you get back to where you want to be.
And the last little thing I'll throw in, just for the heck of it, is there's some research about shod running versus barefoot running. And a minimalist shoe with a change in your mechanical loading pattern may alter the loads on your knee.
Yeah. So something to think about.
Yep.
Thank you very much for calling, Ty. Good luck to you. Appreciate it. Bob in Janesville, on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Top of the morning, guys. The new year brought host of ailments for me. I'm 52 years old. Mm-hmm. I don't mind saying. Since the beginning of the year, my right hand, middle finger, if I go to make a fist,
my middle finger will not touch or cannot touch my palm. It's had various degrees of swelling. It swells and then it doesn't swell. In fact, a week ago I woke up in bed and I'm like, oh wow, this feels great. Well, you know, as the morning went on, you know, I started feeling it again. And it feels as if there's some band, I don't know if it's a tendon or not, going over my knuckle attached to my first knuckle of my finger that feels taut. And I tendonitis, I'm just an old fart or what?
Well, no, you're not an old fart. Did you have any kind of injury to that?
No, it just, you know, it was like, I'm a little more background to this. You know, I went down south for New Year's Eve and get off the plane, and I decided to, okay, let's get some exercise and let's carry the carry-on bags in my arm. We're holding them above ground instead of wheeling them. Well, and then the next day or two, you know, my elbows are, it's like, it depends on, I can do push-ups and this and that, I can weightlift and this and that, but if I hold my arm out straight and pick something up and hold my arm out straight, I feel it in my elbow. And then there's this thing with my right hand. I'm like, God, I'm falling apart.
Well, I wouldn't hold those suitcases out anymore.
So any other joints besides the stuff on the right side? Knees?
Well, my elbows, left and right elbows, both elbows, you know, and I just attributed it to, you know, carrying, you know, carry-on baggage, you know, walking around the airport with it. But I would have assumed, you know, a month and a half later, that would have gone bye-bye.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
But the right hand, you know, it swells, it mm-hmm. doesn't swell, it feels taut all the time.
That's not right.
Strange.
Yeah,
yeah, not right. You know, it's possible that's a tendonitis, but that's not how most tendonitis present. And the fact you have the swelling like this and that tightness. You know, Bob, if you have a family practice physician or primary care physician?
Well, I got to spew forth. You know, I'm going to my doctor tomorrow morning at 7:00.
Okay.
Have him take a look at this.
Yeah, perfect.
I'm looking for some backup. Okay. Know, what you guys say versus what he says.
All right. Well, I think you should, first of all, go to the appointment. It's good you have one. You need to make it clear how long it's been there, and talk about your elbows as well. And let them know about the swelling and the tightness. I mean, that should give the physician some clues about, are there certain tests that should be run and should lead to additional questions being asked? You know, if he rules out everything except tendonitis, then seeing a hand therapist may be helpful. But seeing your doc is a really good idea.
Yeah.
Tendonitis.
A tendonitis is an inflammation of a tendon, so it's typically not associated with joint swelling. It may feel thickened or boggy if it's a synovial tendon, but for the most part, it's pretty isolated, and you can feel it when you use the muscle and tendon, such as an actively bending or straightening your finger. It shouldn't limit your range of motion, so that sounds more like a joint issue. And if you're getting the swelling, you know, it sounds more like a joint issue. So the question is, are you having multiple joint issues that have a common cause? You know, did the carrying the luggage simply stir something up that was latent? It's hard to say.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's move on to Mary in Racine next. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about my knee. I've been having some problems with it for probably a year now, and I finally made an appointment to have it looked at, but I can't get in until May. I have pain in my knee that kind of goes into the front of the leg, not really the shin splint type thing, but sort of on the sides of the front of the knee when I go downstairs. And my knee doesn't hurt necessarily when I walk. The worst time I have is at night when I go to bed and I'm laying flat in bed. And then I also get a pain that feels like it's coming from the sciatic nerve that feels like it's going down into the knee. And there's nights that I don't know where to put my leg because I can't sleep. It hurts so bad. But then in the morning, I can walk on it fine. You know, I don't get it. I haven't fallen. I haven't injured it. I played 9 holes of golf during the summer. I can walk and do that, but I'm kind of stymied.
Well, it's a good thing you're going to go see somebody. But in the meantime, the question is this a primary knee problem or is it a combination of knee and back problem? You know, theoretically, when you lay down in your bed at night, your knee should feel better because it's resting. Do you lay with your legs out fully straight or is your knee slightly bent at night? How do you usually sleep?
Well, I normally sleep on my side, one side or the other, mm-hmm. and with the knee bent, it mm-hmm. doesn't hurt as much. It seems to hurt more when I'm laying flat on my back or flat on my stomach, and that seems to be when the sciatic starts.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we're trying to figure out here is whether the knee problem is a separate problem from your back, because clearly you have a sort of a sciatic back problem, and lying flat on your back and flat on your stomach will both flare up your sciatic, which could be causing your knee pain. And, you know, the two may be interrelated.
So, Mary, the pain you have going down the stairs, is it the same pain you have when you're lying in bed, or is it different?
No, it's different. When I'm lying in bed, it's definitely in my knee. As I'm going down the stairs, the knee hurts slightly, but I don't know if it's, you know, muscles or tendons in the upper part of the leg there, just below the knee that are hurting.
Okay.
It's weird.
Okay. Well, again, sorting out how much is knee versus back or a combination. Waiting until May seems to be that's a long time with the symptoms that you have. I would call, see if they have put you on a cancellation list. You could potentially see a physical therapist first while you're waiting to see a physician. The physical therapist can do an exam and start helping sort out where are the symptoms coming from. I would avoid waiting till May if you could, considering what you just described.
Yeah. And certainly be sure to let them know about the sciatic symptoms, because if you go in and say, well, it's just my knee, they may focus primarily on your knee and perhaps miss the connection to your back.
Right.
So you need to do that.
Yeah.
Good luck, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today as we talk physical therapy issues. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in. If you have a question, you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there. Love to hear from you there. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. On our Facebook page, Amy from Middleton says, my other half has been experiencing sharp pain in the inner outer part of his knee. It's so bad that sometimes his leg just goes out from under him. Doesn't need to be standing on his leg for the pain to strike. It's intense when he is sleeping or just trying to relax. He's been messing with this for almost 2 weeks, saying it will get better. Very active, runs a few miles a day, bikes and hikes all the time. Should he get in to see a doctor? Could this potentially be something serious? Would we have to see his primary, or could he just get referred to a specialist?
Well, this sounds like a pretty interesting question. The first question that comes to mind is, was there an injury? And that's one of the things that if you're trying to decide if someone should see the doctor or not, you look at the signs and symptoms and say, well, geez, is there a logical reason for this?
Yeah.
So, you know, if he said, well, I was running and I twisted my knee, well, you know, then there'd be a logical reason for sharp pain and potentially your leg going out. But if he's a regular runner, exerciser, and this just showed up without any change in activity or any mechanism of injury, well, then you say, well, geez, this is probably something that needs to be looked at because it's outside the norm. So, and also the issue of intense pain when sleeping or relaxing, because most of the time, joint-related problems feel a little better when you relax. When you ask people who have pain, what do you do to help relieve your pain? They say they sit in their recliner or, you know, they relax or they lie down. So the fact that his pain is intense when he's trying to relax, again, is something that's outside the norm for most things. So, I also wonder if he is still running every day and biking and doing those things, or if this pain has been so bad that it sidelined him. So, if that's the case and there's no known mechanism of injury, I'd probably get in to see my primary care and have this looked at.
Yeah, it's almost a little bit like our last caller, Mary. Is it truly the pain associated with his knee, or is it coming from somewhere else? Again, because it doesn't appear to be just associated with weight bearing like Lori described. So having somebody examine him from his back down to his foot on that side and see if they can figure out where this is coming from.
Robert in Milwaukee, hello to you. Thank you for calling. Robert, Robert, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have experience to share with you briefly. At 60 years old age, I'm 70s, I start having pain in the shoulder, in the knees, and started on the back. And this was repeating maybe 3 times a year. I was not able to get out of the bed without help. That means those symptoms I had. And I was lucky to be in Europe, in Greece, was a special clinic for rehabilitation. And I was surprised they did a thorough check to me. And they started with the infection. They found some gum diseases. They cured immediately, extracting, doing whatever. Only for this is a long procedure. And I'm taking care all the time about this. They told me it might be immunological system that for mistaken identity attack the area of the body. That means after they deal with those, they change completely my style of life. That means stay away from sugar. I drink only water, cranberry juice, and all my food now is based on Mediterranean plant. That means nothing packed, nothing canned, no preservatives, no additives. And I am forced by them to walk almost 10,000 steps a day till I sweat. I do still 4 or 5 times a week. And I can tell you, now I'm 70, and I feel better than 50s. Was very, very long story, but this clinic was very well equipped. You go through all departments, and when you get out, you are screened completely.
Boy, that's really good comprehensive medicine. And, you know, that's one of the things that sort of the points we make when we say, you know, when you go in, make sure to tell them about this problem in addition, because so often the specialist care in our country is focused on your shoulder, your elbow,
right,
your hand. And it doesn't take that comprehensive look like Robert describes, where you look at what you're eating, you look at your lifestyle, your exercise, your water intake, the chemicals that you take, and all that is really important for overall health.
Thank you very much, Robert, for telling your story. I appreciate it. And I want to give Dennis in Oshkosh a chance. Dennis, hi to you.
Hello. Good morning. I'm recovering from a partially torn rotator cuff. I went to PT 5 or 6 times, and I do the exercises, and I'm like 80% cured, but I can't fix it. And I also weight lift. So any thoughts about what lifting I should do or shouldn't do? I mean, I've gone from not even being able to sit in some furniture to being able to sleep and sit anywhere, but I can't get rid of it.
How long ago did you have surgery?
No.
No, okay. And how long ago did you tear your rotator cuff?
Well, we're only guessing as to what I did. I think I probably did it crashing a bike three years ago.
Okay. All right. And you continued weightlifting on it?
Yes.
Okay. Are you finished with physical therapy?
Well, I do the things they taught me every day.
Right. Okay.
Or every other day.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I think is important in your rehab is to continue progressing your rehab until you're able to achieve whatever your goals are. And so if your goal is to get back to weightlifting, you should have a progressive resistive exercise that helps bridge the gap between, you know, rehab, where we're kind of getting you out of the hole and back up to where you can manage your daily activities, up to getting back to weightlifting. So the physical therapist should be able to help design a program that helps bridge that gap between where you're at and weightlifting.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Roger in Cottage Grove, hello to you.
Good morning. I have a question regarding spinal nerve compression. I think it's around C6 because it's my left hand, my left arm. And I've been through physical therapy, chiropractic. I have a Saunders machine for traction. And my question is, I do pretty well with this when I'm upright. When I'm recumbent, almost every night, in fact, every night, I'll wake up 2-3 hours after falling asleep and my arm will be, left arm will be painful, numb, tingly. I have to sit up. The question has to do with, is, are there any positions other than sleeping, sitting up, or anything I can do to make it through the night? I'm planning to have surgery for this, a Framenotomy, in April, but I need to make it to April.
Right, right. It's a lot of sleeping between now and then that you need to do.
Right.
So, Roger, what position do you typically wake up in?
On my back.
And is that how you start?
Usually, yes. Okay. Especially now, because I need to try to find a position. It seems like side will bring this on quicker.
Okay. All right. One of the things to try, and if you're not doing this, I would do it while you're in the traction as well, is to have a pillow underneath that left shoulder and arm. When a nerve gets irritated, it doesn't like to be stretched. And when we lie pretty much flat on our backs, that adds a little bit of tension, a little bit of stretch on the nerves as they come out of the neck and down to the shoulder area. Okay. And so over time can cause some irritation. So if you have a pillow that's underneath your shoulder blade and shoulder and supporting your elbow a bit, it just keeps tension off the nerves.
Okay.
And that has helped some people. It's very similar when people have similar complaints when they're sitting. I tell them to try to have that arm supported, whether it's resting on the arm of a chair or rest that elbow on a rolled up backpack or pillow. And then when you're standing, I have people just rest the hand in their pocket or, you know, on the waistband so that arm is just not hanging free. Because, again, it puts a little bit of tension on the nerves and can cause some irritation.
Okay. One other quick question. I'm a guitar player, and my left hand, I can really tell it's different than my right, especially if I'm shampooing my hair or something. The left hand has a different sensitivity. What I'm wondering is when these events happen to me at night, every night, is there any kind of a cumulative effect on those peripheral nerves that will essentially make them not come back like they were?
Well, there's the potential for crossing the line where you will not get full return. The strength is the one that tends to lag the longest. So I don't know if you're having difficulty with fine motor skill, you know, picking a dime up off the top of a table or buttoning your shirts.
No.
Okay. So the dexterity is there. So that's good. You know, I think just the less irritation that you go into this procedure with, then the better chance for a good and complete outcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I would work on whatever stretching that you're doing and strengthening. So, again, you go into this procedure in as good a shape as possible. And then after the surgery, once you've recovered from the surgery itself, again, seeing a physical therapist to examine you and what's changed, what hasn't changed, and, again, put you on a good home program so you can sleep and you can play guitar like you'd like to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do exercise 4 days a week in a gym, and that's one thing my wife had mentioned, that maybe I should stop doing weights. I don't do a lot of weights. I just do some, as a previous caller, for toning. She kind of wants me to quit doing that. Do you think there's any sense to that?
Well, lightweight is better. You need to be really. You need to watch your head and neck posture as you're lifting.
Okay.
You want to stay standing tall. You don't want to let that chin drop forward. That puts your neck in an extended posture or position. So you want to keep that neck in its, what you call it, its neutral position.
Okay.
And that can help.
All right. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling.
And, you know, and similar in the last two calls about the gym and weightlifting, it all comes down to a matter of dosing the exercises properly. So, for example, Dennis, with his partial rotator cuff tear, the exercises he was doing at home weren't sufficient to get him to doing weights at the gym. So he needs to be at the gym doing light weights to work his way back up to the heavier weights. And similarly, Roger can do some weightlifting at the gym, but it has to be done properly. He may do better with weight machines where his upper body and head and neck are supported rather than free weights where there's going to be more tension on his spine in general.
There we go. Sarah emailed and wonders about her thumb joint. She has arthritis at the very base of both thumb joints. At my wrists, it can be painful, but the main concern is, should I be doing weight-bearing poses in yoga, like inclined plane or plank pose? Not overweight, don't mind the pain so much.
Generally, those things, if she's doing weight-bearing poses in yoga or Pilates and her thumbs are hurting, she's overloading those.
Okay.
So she should avoid those positions. That being said, some well-placed towel rolls to change the position of her hand so it's not flat on a hard surface can unload those joints. So, you know, a good instructor should be able to provide her with some alternative postures. There's all kinds of, you know, foams and things out there that people use to modify those postures for people who have various kinds of pains in their back, neck, hands, etc. So there are things that you can do.
All right.
Those are really important joints, and they do break down over time, but you want to minimize that.
And we'll be back with Lori and Bill after a quick look at the news. Stay with us. We're dealing with aches and pains and sprains and strains on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have them back, and thank you very much for listening in. Questions at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there as well. And Tim in Madison's been waiting a while, so let's just go right to Tim. Thank you for waiting, Tim. Hi, what's on your mind?
I had a question about hip pain and the difference between maybe muscle problems and bursitis. I've had for about 2 months kind of like a very localized pain in my tensor fasciitis, and I've been doing all sorts of stretches, sort of the stretches for that muscle actually seem to irritate it. And I'm just wondering how you, like the PTs, can tell the difference between a muscle problem and what sort of different things you would do. And the other thing is, I also went into a massage and I couldn't tell if, it seemed I couldn't tell if, you know, when you're doing a massage, you can actually really release some knots by pushing onto it. But it seemed like maybe that was making it worse.
Well, how do you tell the difference between a muscle problem and a bursa problem? Typically, that's done by tests that we do. So theoretically, if it's a muscle problem, if you A, stretch the muscle to its end range, and or B, resist it, then that will hurt. If it's a bursal problem, then those resisted or stretching tests to the muscle shouldn't be painful. That being said, if in the process of stretching or resisting that muscle, you also compress the bursa, then you have to sort it out. And we can usually do that by the position that we put the joint in when we test the muscles. We do it by palpation. For example, around the hip, the most common place to get a bursitis is in the greater trochanter. Very isolated, very point tender, fairly superficial in most people. And so you can put your finger right on it and know that you've got a bursitis. So we do a combination of tests and measures. You can also have both things going on at once. If your TFL and some of your glute muscles are tight or weak, you can also develop a concurrent bursitis, and you could be dealing with both those problems. Anytime the number of diagnoses increase, your ability to accurately diagnose those goes down. So it gets hard. So sometimes we treat them both, not knowing which came first.
Tim, are you having any back pain with this, or is it all local to that area?
It's pretty local to that area, and when I did the foam roller on my... Well, it's very associated with a snap right at that same point where I can feel it with my finger going up and downstairs. Okay. And when I foam rolled my glutes, that snap really went down. Okay. But it hasn't really seemed to go away. When I walk, it seems to be better, but when I sit, it gets worse. That's what I'm seeing during the day, it gets worse. And then if I do sort of exercises like the pigeon stretch, or if I lay on my left side and hang my right foot over my left side, mm-hmm. to kind of stretch the IT band, that kind of, this is a stretch that I've been doing for a long time for my knees, and it seems to irritate that. Yeah. But I can find it really specific. When I'm standing, the soreness is distributed throughout the tensor fasciae. But if I'm sitting, I can find exactly where it is.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Bill.
Well, I was just gonna say, it's, you know, typically muscles are more painful when they're being used, not when you're at rest, which includes sitting. And if this was just something that was tight, you should have been better by now. So I'm looking for, why isn't this going away? Could it relate to your foot and ankle mechanics? Is there something related to your back and your knee that are putting more stress on those muscle groups in that area? Sometimes a deep massage followed by stretching can help, you know, if it is a trigger point in a muscle. So whether there's something joint-wise going on, which may be also the bursa, but there's something that's preventing this from recovering, and I think it's just more than just something that's tight.
And many times, static stretching, where you take it to the end range and you hold it there for a long period of time, can be more irritating. So there is a shift in those situations to what's called dynamic stretching, where you take it to the end range dynamically, and then you come out of it and you go back into it and out of it. So, for example, a walking lunge would be an example of a dynamic stretch. So you may need to rethink how you're stretching, and traditional static long-held stretching may not be the right one for you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Tony in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello, Larry.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got two herniated discs, L4 and L5. About 6 years ago, I think it was, I had injections for those, and that did the trick for a long time. But late last fall, I got a little energetic in some yard work and lifted some things I shouldn't have. So I've been dealing with this since. Things have improved some. I've been going to a chiropractor. But I'm not sure I'm going to get any better just doing that. I've got an appointment to see a spine specialist at the end of April, but I'm wondering if I should be doing something before then.
Well, yes, the more you can do beforehand, the better. I would assume, hope that your rehabilitation program is including some degree of stretching around the hips and some core strengthening or stabilization. Because what you describe is not necessarily that uncommon at the L4, 5, L5, S1 disc area. So you want to take as much pressure off that spot as you can. So hip flexibility is critical, and then you strengthen as much as you can around that area. And then whoever you're working with should be taking you through a typical day for you, and whether it's sitting posture or lifting or bending, teaching you ways, again, to minimize pressure on that low lumbar area. So, you know, working with your chiropractor, whoever, those should be the things that they're providing for you, help get you in as good a shape as possible.
Do you think it would be wise to switch to a physical therapist at this point?
Well, I don't think it's – if you feel you've reached a plateau and you've discussed this with your chiropractor and there is nothing more that they can add, then I'd go see somebody with a different background. It'd be the same thing if you called and said you were seeing a physical therapist, and should you see somebody else? When you've hit a plateau and they can't necessarily give you any more information as how to get you off that plateau, then it's time to look elsewhere and get a different opinion.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Kyle in Watertown.
Hi.
Your turn. Hi.
Good morning or afternoon now. I'm going to try and make this as short as I can, but I was out cutting wood about 2 months ago, just before Christmas, and I stepped in a woodchuck hole, and my ankle went one way, my knee went another way, and so I had extreme pain immediately. Following that, I was icing it, taking ibuprofen, and about a month ago, the pain basically plateaued. And so I still have a sharp shooting pain in my knee when I'm walking. And also in my foot, it seems like it's on the top of my foot, and then it spreads out like you would open your fingers up wide over the ball of my foot or towards my toes. I have an appointment with an orthopedic doctor this Thursday, but I thought to avoid a visit to him if there was something else that would be recommended for troubleshooting or what else could be going on in there that I haven't seen already. And there's no noticeable swelling around my knee or my foot, and I'm really not sure where the pain is coming from or why it's still here almost 2 months after the original injury.
All right. Lori?
Well, there are a number of reasons potentially for that. You know, depending upon the position of your foot when it went down on that woodchuck hole, I mean, my guess is you were kind of toes down and you twisted your foot and ankle. You could have sprained your midfoot, which is a tough thing to heal from. It's possible you also had a hairline fracture of one of your metatarsal bones, those long bones in your foot. You know, if it's a hairline, you may not get a lot of swelling, but you can get that pain that radiates out. It's more likely a sprain, but it is on the differential. And then you probably, I'm guessing your knee went in. And on the inside of your knee, you probably really compressed your meniscus and your joint surfaces. You may have torn your meniscus. You may not be able to detect any swelling, but sometimes if a medical professional goes and messes with your knee a little bit, they'll be able to find where that swelling is hiding in your knee. So it's possible that it's there. I think you need to see your doctor. Sure. And you need to go in. You need to have these things looked at. If it was a simple sprain or strain, and it'd be better by now. A sharp pain, something you need to have that looked at, because it's going to be unhealthy for your foot, your knee, your hip, and your back in the long run.
No.
Okay.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Michael in Milwaukee, we're on to you. Hi, Michael.
Hi. First of all, I've had some questions about frozen shoulder syndrome. And a quick background, about 10 years ago, I had a severely broken arm, and they put a rod in my arm, and that same year, they had to remove the rod because it failed, and I guess in either putting it in or taking it out, they damaged somewhat my rotator cuff. So that's been kind of an ongoing issue, which I never really had surgery or anything for. But last Sunday, a week ago, I was going for a walk, and I lifted my arm, and all of a sudden my arm kind of started feeling real weird, and by that evening I couldn't move my arm, and I was in severe pain. Couldn't sleep on it, whatever, I had to sleep in the chair the whole nine yards. And my shoulder, it was in my shoulder, it kept going into muscle spasms. So anyways, luckily I got in to see my orthopedic surgeon on Monday. And I thought it was my rotator cuff that finally really got screwed up. And he said, no, you have frozen shoulder syndrome. And he said it's going to take a long rehabilitation, and it'll, you know, come back and see me in 3 months. And even if it isn't getting better in 3 months, you know, just keep going with your rehabilitation. Luckily, I got in to see a physical therapist right away on Tuesday. I've had two appointments with the physical therapist. And after a week, I have almost total movement. I still have some discomfort, but it seems like it's almost totally alleviated itself.
Good enough.
Here's my question is, two questions basically. What would cause it to come on so fast? And number two is, how did it get better so fast?
Well, I guess I'd have to say it probably wasn't a true frozen shoulder, because a true frozen shoulder, you're looking at 18 months typically before it gets better. So my guess is that you had, you know, kind of a severe bursitis potentially. What caused it to come on, I can't say. You know, I just don't know. There are probably 1,000 little things, you know, many of which were in alignment on that day to get it stirred up. And then whatever the physical therapist has been doing to treat that has been successful. But in general, I'd say it wasn't a true textbook frozen shoulder.
And from what I understood, frozen shoulder actually meant that the inside of the joint actually was locked up, and the physical therapist said it was a muscular thing, that she could tell that it was muscular and not the joint itself.
Right. She could probably tell that by her exam, which is kind of when we went mm-hmm. back to the muscle versus bursa mm-hmm. question. You can tell by the exam whether it's joint-related, we call it intra-articular or extra-articular, happening outside the joint.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks for calling, Michael. Appreciate it. Email from Martha. I'm 60, recently diagnosed with osteopenia, told to try a book called Strong Women Stay Young. I started with 4-pound ankle weights for the leg lifts, and now I'm up to 10 pounds. When I do the leg lifts, I hear my right knee rub and creak. Not painful. Sound is unnerving, however. Should I be alarmed or reduce the weight? I also walk about 4 miles 4 times a week.
Well, lots of people snap, crackle, and pop. She's up to 10 pounds. You know, it depends upon what kind of leg lift she's doing. If she's doing a straight leg lift, if she's doing them correctly, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. I would have to say that it would make the most sense to go in and see somebody for one or two visits and get instructed in an exercise program to make sure she's doing them correctly and that she's doing the right exercises given her osteoporosis. There are some exercises that can put the bones and or joints at greater risk. And I presume if she's following this book, which is a pretty well-known book for osteoporosis, that she's doing things safely. But I would still say that one or two visits with a physical therapist to get appropriate exercises and to look at this exercise and say, nope, you know, when you go up to 10 pounds, your mechanics change, you're not doing it correctly, and that's why you're overloading your joint. So
there you go. Jim in West Salem has a question or comment. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
When do you apply heat and when do you apply ice?
Ice or heat? When do you apply one or the other?
Well, if it's an acute injury, you apply ice. And then the general rule of thumb is when in doubt, apply ice. You know, there are times, for example, when you have arthritis or a chronic joint condition where the heat feels much better and you feel much better afterwards, and that's when you use heat. Yeah. But otherwise, if it's a brand new, relatively acute injury, ice is better.
Yep. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. And an email from John. I have severe lower back pain that was diagnosed by an MRI as a swollen disc. Degeneration and stenosis. I'm very active and enjoy cycling, but the pain is inhibiting. No surgical option. Any advice on a typical or on a type of physical therapy and or exercise?
Well, the swollen disc, bulging disc, and stenosis. Stenosis just means narrowing, so there's not enough space for nerves. John didn't say anything about pain in the legs or numbness or tingling, which is a good thing. But there are certain disc conditions where sitting, and especially sitting flexed forward, can cause lots of pressure in and around those discs. So that's what he needs to avoid. If it's severe enough, probably the best place for him to get some activity at this point is in the pool. Okay. So I don't know if John has access to a pool or not, but there's strength that you can do in the pool. You can do some aerobic work in the pool. The buoyancy of the water takes some pressure off that back. But the cycling I would put on hold until that pain is back down to a reasonable level.
Lisa in Summit Lake. Hi.
Hello. I have a question. My daughter has an inverted sternum, and what could she do at home to strengthen her sternum?
Well, the sternum is a bone, so you don't usually strengthen the bone itself, but you strengthen the muscles around it. I presume she's been to see her physician and got this diagnosis?
Yes.
And is she symptomatic from it? Is that what took you there in the first place? Or
yes, when she does heavy exercise, it really bothers her, and she gets a lot of pain.
Okay.
She received this injury from playing basketball, being elbowed one too many times.
Okay. And what is the physician saying about it in terms of safety?
The physician told her she could not do any more sports as far as, you know, with physical contact.
Okay. All right. Well, typically some strengthening exercises for the chest wall muscles, as well as strengthening for the rib cage muscles, breathing exercises, diaphragmatic breathing, deep breathing exercises to work on the small muscles between the ribs and the muscles that attach to the sternum are most useful. And obviously they should be done below a threshold of pain.
Okay.
If she has any questions, again, she's already in the medical system, seeing somebody for one or two visits to get instructed in something so that the therapist can see how she responds to the exercises when she does them. Sometimes it's not a matter of, oh, do this, this, and this, but you try different ones to and assess her response to it.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I do have one other question. My husband has tennis elbow, and he is wondering what he can do to relieve his pain.
Well, if it's in his dominant arm and it's something that he uses on a regular basis, day in and day out, then we typically suggest a wrist splint because it's actually an inflammation of the wrist muscles that attach at the elbow. So we suggest a wrist splint for heavy activities. You can also get what's called a tennis elbow strap that goes on just below the elbow to help take some of the pressure off that insertion. And then there are some very specific exercises that we recommend for tennis elbow. There's also some evidence that suggests that cervical spine manipulation, elbow manipulation, and wrist manipulation are helpful to get people going a little bit faster. So if you wanted to go in and see a physical therapist who specializes in manual therapy, they could also provide those services for them.
Oh, well, great. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. And Keith in Presque Isle, you have a quick question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, my job requires me to hang on to grips all day long. And after a long time of hanging on to these, I take my hands off and I can't hardly straighten them out. And then when I do straighten my fingers out, it kind of sounds something on the area of like meat going through a meat grinder. A lot of popping and stuff going on.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Keith, I don't know if there's any way that you can modify these grips. You know, there's ergonomic tools, everything from screwdrivers to hammers that change the width or the girth of whatever you're holding on to that can change the position of your hand and take some of the stress off the tendons in particular, that muscles that are tightening up on you. You know, if you'd see a physical therapist who specializes in work-related injuries or ergonomics, they could steer you in a good direction for this. Yeah. And also then give you some stretching to do and strengthening to help in the meantime as well.
Probably pretty important to see somebody.
Yeah, if this is part of your job, I would get in when you can. Yeah.
Yeah, because the handles are somewhat, you know, they're not just plain handles because they've got several buttons on them that I got to use my fingers on.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the more that you can describe, or if you can take pictures of this and bring them in to show the therapist, or if a therapist can come and see your job setting, see if they can come up with some modifications for you.
Yeah. Good luck. Yeah.
Does your work have any ergonomic specialists there at all?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, then you definitely should get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thanks a lot for calling. I wish we had more time to spend with you, Keith, but we're out of time. And Lori and Bill, thank you so much. You'll be back third Monday of the month, next month, so March 19th.
Very good.
Excellent.
Look forward to it.
And thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.